An old classic you'll enjoy. You should enjoy Detroit City. Bobby Bear. Yeah. He'd been around a while. Terrible Tommy here in the bunker, right here in north central Indiana. Not too far from P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And that's where you send your donations and you send your snail mail. And there also go up to resist.com and get educated. That's one thing that white people need more than anything else is educated about race. Because if you don't understand the differences in the races and the inequality of the races, you're going to have a hell of a time in this world. Well, boys and girls, it is October the 19th, 2015, Moon's Day. We got a half moon out there. How about that? Half moon. And it's overcast and cool. Boy, it got cold here over the weekend. Got down to, 28 yesterday morning here. My windows on my van get all screwed up. I forgot to put I have these big rubber sheets, and I put them on the front and the back of my van. That way, no matter what happens, if it ices over or snows over or what, I just pull those rubber sheets off there, and I got my nice clean windows, and I don't have to worry about running into somebody that I can't see. Yeah. Well, let's get back into the program here. Let's get back into our pessimist guide to history. Yeah. I love it. Love it, man. 746 to 749 AD. Plague ravages Constantinople. Not Istanbul, but Constantinople. Oh, you never heard that song? Yeah. Yet another plague, possibly carried to Constantinople by slave traders. See what happens when you mess around in the slave trade? Possibly carried to Constantinople by the slave traders. Devastated the population. The disease was further spread to what is known as what is now Italy and Greece, and is believed to have killed some 200,000 people. At least this plague wasn't blamed on the troops coming home, which usually many times it is, and it's true that they go off into these wars into foreign weird countries and drag home viruses. So all the booty they won in the war and all the women they drug home didn't do them any good because they died of a virus or they lost everything. So much for going on expeditions of war. Now, in 817 A.D., actually not A.D. because he never lived. What a ripoff. Rome burns in a great fire. Fire broke out in the crowded central section of Rome and burned for 6 days, consuming the closely packed wooden structures. A second fire began soon after the first and burned for 3 more days. Only 4 of the city's 14 sections were undamaged. We can't blame Nero this time. Now, in 930, the Muslim rebels sacked the holy city of Mecca. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. The Carmathians, a Muslim reformist sect, rebelled against the ruling Orthodox. Nothing's changed. Nothing changed. The names changed. The caliphs stormed Mecca and massacred some 30,000 people. The rebels also stole the Muslim sacred black stone, an important Islamic relic, which according to legend was given to Adam after his fall. Oh, brother, people will believe about anything. With the development of yet another religion, Islam, we have even greater potential for infighting among the faithful. Well, they'd rather fight than switch. By the way, when the stone was returned 20 years later, it was found to be broken. Oh, man, it probably started another war. The War of the Broken Stone. Do you begin to see how insane the human race and all the races are? They're insane. All you have to do is read through here. In 1040 A.D., 50,000 die in Persian earthquake. The Persian city of Tabriz, in modern Iran, was hit by a massive earthquake. Estimates of the dead were put at 50,000 or more. This was one of the 5 big earthquakes that destroyed Tabriz over the centuries. The founding fathers didn't know they were building an earthquake zone, so there's a lot of earthquakes there in Iran, Persia. 1084, the Normans sack Rome. Viking guys. Pope Gregory VII, hoping to break a siege of Rome by Holy Roman Emperor Henry IV, called upon the Norman Robert Guiscard for aid. The Norman army of 36,000 men, mainly Muslims, recruited by the Normans. There you go. Got that race mixing crap? The Vikings recruited the Muslims. Of course, there were a lot of Muslims that were probably white, but not enough. Tell the right-wing guys that story. The marauders set fires, massacred thousands, and took thousands more as slaves. They were those Muslims they recruited, and probably mostly non-white Muslims, were killing thousands of white people in Rome. Yeah, we've always been good at killing each other. And even hiring other people to kill each other. The sacking of Rome has always been a favorite sport throughout history. You can say that again, brother. In 1106, a very bad year for Venice, the year 1106 turned out to be disastrous for Venice. In January, heavy rains, high tides, and strong winds conspired to create terrible flooding within the city. The nearby town of Malamocca was washed completely away. Houses, churches, even the land itself was washed into the sea by the high water and heavy wind-driven waves. 700 years later, the ruins of the lost town would still be seen underwater at low tide. Within days of the flood, however, a fire broke out in Venice. Well, if it didn't have bad luck, they wouldn't have any luck at all. That spread through 6 parishes before it was finally put out. Then on April the 6th, an even greater fire devastated the city. The blaze spread across the Grand Canal, consuming at least 24 churches in much of the city before dying out. wooden houses lay in ruins, but the stone and marble basilica of San Marco and the Doge's Palace were survived, and therefore use of wood for building was actively discouraged in Venice. Smart thing on the part of the city planners. Well, it wouldn't take much to flood Venice because it's already half underwater. Those buildings over there and those canals and everything. 1169 A.D., Mount Etna erupts. Uh-oh, here she goes. Hell visited Earth as the Sicilian volcano Mount Etna erupted for the first time in centuries. Part of the volcano cone blew out explosively during the eruption. The accompanying earthquake and tidal waves killed over 15,000 people. Mother Nature don't mess around. She's not going to mess around again. You take that to the bank. They can have all their little atomic bombs they want, but when Mother Nature goes on a high horse, gets on a high horse, makes that look like nothing. Old Mother Nature at work once more. 1170, the murder of Thomas A. Beckett. There's a good movie about that. I don't know whether it follows the truth or not. A long-standing feud between King Henry II of England and the Archbishop Thomas A. Beckett concerning Henry's authority over the Catholic Church in England was finally gone too far. On December 29th, four of the king's knights, fully armed with swords and axes, arrived at Canterbury Cathedral. Claiming to be acting under the king's orders, the knights cursed the archbishop and demanded that he leave the kingdom. Beckett refused, saying, "I trust in the King of Heaven." That was your first mistake. The knights left, but later returned and demanded entrance to the cathedral where the monks had sheltered the archbishop. Refusing to hide from his fate, Beckett ordered the doors opened, because he was going to depend on the great God into heaven to protect him. Wrong. The knights entered with swords drawn, demanding, "Where is Thomas Beckett, traitor to the king?" Quote, "I'm ready to die for my Lord," unquote. The archbishop answered unwaveringly, "that in my blood the church may obtain liberty and peace," unquote. The knights fell upon Beckett with their swords. I guess the speech didn't have any effect on him, knocking him down and cracking open his skull. The martyred archbishop fell, his blood and brains spilled over the floor of the cathedral, and he was so determined to protect. And all the king's horses and all the king's men and the great spook in the sky couldn't put him back together again. Henry II, as a penance, and maybe to assuage a guilty conscience, walked barefoot into Canterbury Cathedral and underwent a flogging at Beckett's tomb. We're a crazy bunch, man. These white people, we're a crazy bunch. Thomas did not die in vain, however. He was canonized, and thus began the famous pilgrimages, which helped the town prosper and would later bring fame to Geoffrey Chaucer. Well, you see, go through a few things like that, murder a few people, and then they make it a big deal, and then people come to pilgrimage it, and like the ones that I was with over in Israel, all these whacked out Zionist Christians, and I was on that bus with them for about a week. Almost drove me insane. The nonsense I heard come out of their mouths. It's enough to drive a man crazy. Well, one more cool dude in history here, 1175 to 1218. Genghis Khan, the Bloody Terror. After succeeding his father as chieftain at age 13. Remember, he's the spiritual father of ISIS. Yeah. They should fly his flag. A savage Mongol army on an epic journey of conquest and destruction. His armies sacked and pillaged their way across Asia, creating an empire that stretched from Pacific to Black Sea. The Mongols were little disturbed by wholesale slaughter they used to gain their objectives. Cut their heads off, who cares? In 6 bloodthirsty months, Genghis Khan suppressed rebellion in Herat, Afghanistan. Oh, we're back in Afghanistan again. Oh, shit. By killing a reported 1.6 million people. Well, the Pentagon hasn't got that gone that far yet, but they want to stay there and catch up. They want to kill 1.6 million too. No, they want to kill 1.6 million in one. So they're in the book of records, Guinness Book of Records, man. When Genghis conquered Bukhara in 1218, 160,000 of Shah Muhammad's troops were killed. Well, I'd hate to have a job back then of sweeping up and gathering up all these bodies and getting rid of them. Man, jeez, before they started stinking. Quote, I will carry slaughter and cause devastation to my enemy, so my name will live on forever as Genghis, he said. Well, it is. Kill enough people, they'll never forget you. His very existence terrified his subjects and no doubt discouraged attempts at rebellion. In fact, when he finally died, his armies put to death anyone who encountered his funeral procession. Wow. Now, here's a guy who makes Mithridates and Caligula and Nero seem like amateurs. Unfortunately, he is not the last. Well, that's it for today, and we'll be back tomorrow with more of that kind of stuff. We like that stuff, because that's stuff that most kids don't even hear about in school. You don't hear about it in the churches, where the knights come in, the Christian knights with the swords and axes, and split the guy's head open, the brains all over the ground in the church. We never heard about that when I went to Sunday school. Hey, man, this kind of history gets me all excited. There's hope for us, too. You got to get busy and start putting out these stickers, these unequal stickers. Listen to this. Dear Tom, thanks for the stickers. I gave 2 to a co-worker, who then gave 1 to his brother-in-law, who then made hundreds of copies and has begun dispensing them among white friends of his. Everyone seems to like the simplicity of the symbol and what it says without saying nothing. White working class young people are really getting fed up with the nigger situation here in Baltimore and surrounding counties. This one symbol can actually help radicalize some whites who don't care for the swastika and see it as too right wing, or don't fly the Dixie flag because they feel no connection to the South. It merely symbolizes the thought, quote, there's no way these niggers or mestizos are my fucking equals, unquote. And if posted in stratified P areas, can be a tip of the hat to fellow racists and spit in the eye to the enemy. Lone Wolf, well, I'm glad you caught on to that. This is the best symbol we can rally around. Forget all those other symbols. This symbol will drive them crazy, man. Crazy. I'm going to check and see how much it costs to get a flag. Maybe 100,000 of them. I don't know. Wouldn't that be nice if you're going to have a parade? I'm not too much for parades, but if we had 1,000 people marching with one of those flags like that, unequal flags. Oh, wow. Well, thank you from Baltimore for that great news. Well, I see we got some whacked out Christians, niggers down here in Indianapolis, Indiana. That's about a 2-hour drive from me. Yeah, they're raising hell in Indianapolis, and I'm not going to say much about it because the more the white people get their feet put to the fire to the point where there's not enough cops to take care of these guys, the better off it'll be, because they're not going to do anything. But I'll tell you what's going to happen, probably, if it goes on very long. The Ku Klux Klan clowns will come to town. Yeah. We're going to save Indianapolis from these niggas. We're going to run them out of town. And, of course, then the cops will load them up and run them out of town. The Klan today is not the Klan of yesterday. It's not even close. The real Klan was in the, right after the Civil War. Not even the Klan of the 20s was that hot. But the original Klan, yeah, they took care of business. And some of the Klans in the 50s, one or two, took care of business. But these guys now, they chase these things like, media things.
Oh, we can get a lot of publicity. Put on a robe, Jake. Let's run down there in our little truck and wave the rebel flag, and we'll get all over the news. We'll get interviewed by those big shots from CBS. Okay, come on, Billy Bob.
Yeah, that report was from our Las Vegas wolf up there, Lone Wolf Las Vegas. Now, here's another one he sent me. Well, anyhow, this is about the political parties in Europe turning right and supposedly going to resist the invasion. Don't put much faith in that. And unfortunately, what they'll do is turn it right wing, and then they'll screw it up. They're going to get a whole lot of people killed for nothing. Now, what they need is a straight-out working-class eruption in these countries. No flags, no political parties, just people, and run them out. And then those people can go back down to their countries in the Middle East and run our troops out and get them out of there. Yeah, we shouldn't be there anyhow. So that's the thing. We'll drive them back out of Europe across the Mediterranean, and then they'll make a holy war and drive all U.S. and French and English troops out of there that's causing the problem in the first place. And if the Muslims, if they want to attack each other and kill each other, so what? That's not my business, not your business, not anybody's business. It's their business. You know, they'd like to attack Trump for being a male chauvinist, but it's impossible. Despite his comments, Trump's inner circle has always included many women. Well, yeah, that's what I believe. Any organization or anything cooking, we need women in there. White women. That's right. The Klan back in the 20s was mostly a lodge situation like the Masons. And it was a once a month or once a week chance for the guy to get out of the house and leave his wife at home instead of taking his wife to the meeting. There's nothing a politician won't do. That's why I quit running. You got to be a real rat to get serious about running for office. You know, look at Hillary. What a bitch she is. She's learned well from the men, of course. They're just as bad, but she is a witch. Libyan National Security Advisor Mousassian Gaddafi is pictured here with U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton at the State Department in 2009. During Tuesday night's Democratic debate, incidentally, the picture is all cozy. They're just having a good time. Everybody's smiling. Hillary and the guy there that's from the government, Gaddafi. And his name was Gaddafi. He must have been one of the 85 sons of Gaddafi. During Tuesday night's Democratic debate, Hillary Clinton forcefully defended her backing of the 2011 U.S. intervention in Libya and led to the overthrow of Muammar Gaddafi. See, the Democrats really screwed up there. They should have stayed totally out of it and let the Republicans do all this dirty shit and let them pay the price. But instead, the Democrats jumped right in. Of course, she was Secretary of State. Quote, "We had a murderous dictator, Gaddafi, who had American blood on his hands." I don't think too much. She said, adding that he was threatening to massacre large numbers of Libyan people. I never read that anyplace. "And we had Arabs standing by our side saying, we want you to help us deal with Gaddafi." This problem was that those Arabs' hands were more bloody than Gaddafi's. But Clinton's response obscures the largely forgotten moment in U.S. diplomacy, a period less than 2 years earlier when she and the Obama administration were actively cozying up to the murderous Gaddafi. Remember now, Gaddafi had about 10 or 15 years ago said he's going to change his ways and he wanted to be friends with the United States and the whole bit. Anytime you say you want to be friends with the United States, you're going to get murdered. I'm very pleased to welcome Minister Gaddafi here to the State Department, she said, warmly greeting Mustasim Gaddafi, the Libyan dictator's son and national security advisor at the State Department in April 2009. We deeply value the relationship between the United States and Libya. Oh God, they're so filthy, these people. To be sure, the rapprochement with Gaddafi began under President George W. Bush in 2003 when Libyan dictator agreed to give up his arsenal of chemical weapons. Well, it was before that he had decided to play nice. And later, to compensate the families of the 1988 bombing of Pan Am Flight 103, which killed 189 Americans, and for which the former Libyan intelligence agents was convicted by a Scottish court. But the process accelerated in the early days of the Clinton's tenure at the State Department. Clinton named her first international energy envoy, David Goldwyn, who formerly served as executive director of the U.S. Libyan Business Association. There's those capitalistas. Yeah. An oil industry-funded group that was actively lobbying for new U.S. business deals with Gaddafi's government. Well, as long as you can have business, I mean, you know, what's the problem? The business of the United States is business, is what Calvin Coolidge said. In July 2009, Clinton dispatched her Assistant Secretary for Near Eastern Affairs, Jeffrey Feltman. Feltman sounds a little kikish to me. To Tripoli, where he met with Moussa Koussa, Gaddafi's foreign minister, and expressed the U.S. desire to press the relationship forward, unquote. With new dialogues on trade, investment, and political military affairs, Feltman even gloated the possibility, or floated the possibility of a meeting between Obama and Gaddafi at the United Nations. They did meet that month and shook hands at the G8 summit in Italy. Well, shows a picture on my monitor here of Gaddafi and Obama shaking hands. Everybody's all smiling. Gaddafi should have got out of there, ran out of there screaming. The Libyan leader, these contacts outraged human rights advocates and members of the Pan Am Flight 103 family group. It makes me sick to think that my government has been complicit in keeping Gaddafi in power. Stephanie Bernstein, whose husband Michael Bernstein, a Justice Department lawyer, was killed in the Pan Am bombing, said in 2011. Well, what about all those Americans who got killed on the USS Liberty? What about all the Americans that got killed there in Lebanon? What about the... It's all right if some Americans die, but other Americans die, fuck it. U.S. policy and Clinton's views did change in February 2011 when Arab Spring protests erupted in Libya, raising fears of bloody retaliation by Gaddafi's security forces. What's the matter, boy? He's a dictator. Of course he's a dictator. You would put him in power, you make deals with them because they're dictators and they serve your purpose. You decide they don't serve your purpose and they're not democratic. We got to get rid of them. Well, anyhow, that's enough of that shit. You know the way the game is played. And if you believe any goddamn comment that comes out of these people's mouths, then you're a fool. You know, when I was in the Army and traveled all over Europe, I knew quite a few prostitutes. I don't mind admitting it. Most of them were 100 times more honest than these people we have in our government. I mean, there's no comparison. I mean, you know, if I believed Mother Teresa was a good person, which I don't, but from what they say about her, I would say that most of these prostitutes I knew were like a Mother Teresa compared to these bitches and bastards in Washington. I mean, you know, you may think I get a little upset and excited about it, but you can't believe how depraved these people are and how they deserve anything bad that happens to them. Yeah, there's an article in here about the story behind the women that fought for the right to vote. That's a very bad shame on white men that they would allow nigger men to vote before white women got the vote. And the white women should have got the vote immediately. And it's an insult to our race that the white fathers of the time gave the vote to the nigger men. You know? That's a shame. That is a horrible shame. Of course, on the other hand, voting don't mean much anyhow, so I don't... People were fighting and getting their heads busted and everything else for the right to vote for crooked politicians. Votes counted by crooked people. You know, a few years ago when I did the crazy thing and ran for office on a write-in candidacy here in this area for Congress, why, hell, they said, well, right here, this is where you vote. I couldn't figure it out. I mean, it was such a clusterfuck, I couldn't figure it out. They had the machines and all this stuff, and I forget what happened. I think I had to have somebody come over and walk me through the whole thing. Well, I see today the Canadian suckers are running out to the polls to vote. And it's not going to make any difference because the world economic situation is moving steadily towards a total collapse. And there's nothing you can do and nobody you can vote for that's going to change it. Hey, one of the Lone Wolf Club members says, I really do enjoy reading this guy's articles the same way you listen to Mike Malloy's show. Well, not all the time, but sometimes. The only difference is this guy, Fred Reed, acknowledges differences between the races. I'm not sure he is a racist, but he does talk a lot about the differences between the races and the need for separation. Well, if he says that, then he is a racist. And he should be respected, because that's what we stand for, I stand for. He's also anti-war and does not believe people are equal. In other words, this guy has a lot of common sense. Let's see, what is his name? FredOnEverything.org, or it may be FredOnEverything.com. Might check it out. Maybe we have a compadre there. He's sort of funny, too, so you might check him out. There's a left-wing group here that has some good stuff. You might want to look it over. They're obviously not racial, but they're called the Socialist Equality Party. And they've sent me stuff for quite a while, but I was reading through some of their stuff, and some of their stuff is pretty good. And so, don't run over to Stormfront and tell them, oh, Metzger's supporting these communists. But you might find some interesting things. I noticed some interesting articles here on the World Socialist website. Let me know what you think. I see their intergalactical headquarters is right up here in Michigan. Oak Park, Michigan. That's up by Detroit, I believe. They've got a telephone number on there and everything. Somebody wants to call them up and find out more about it, be my guest. But since they say the Socialist Equality Party, now you could say maybe economics equality, but if they go for racial equality, then they're just not educated right. Educated. Well, I see this big black mama she's the head of the anti-rape outfit, I think, at what college? Oxford University? Well, she's resigning her position. because she admitted to raping somebody. She's the head of the anti-rape group that admitted raping somebody. Negroes are interesting people. She was the editor of the No Heterox. In other words, No Heterosexual, an LGBT publication. Teraba is her name, first name, was also an officer in the Oxford's People of Color and Racial Equality and Black Students Committee and National Campaign Against Fees and Cuts. She resigned those positions after admitting in a Facebook post that she had had sex with someone without consent. That would have been an interesting thing to see. Teraba says a person whom she became involved with informed her that they had non-consensual sex. Wow. I'm sitting here scratching my head trying to figure out how that would work between two women. A woman raping a woman. Well, I'm sure she could beat the hell out of her and maybe kill her or break her arm or something, but as far as the sexual part, that's a little strange. Maybe she broke off her dildo. Maybe that's it. Well, this is to show you how, you know, Christianity and these crazy Abrahamic religions are wild to white people, you know. But when you get it into the black race with their childlike brain, they go crazy. Witnesses were horrified as they watched a Bronx mother toss her baby from a six-story building during a psychotic episode. According to police, Tanisha Farron allegedly dangled her daughter, Junala Lawrence. Boy, where are they coming up with these crazy-ass names? I think that started in the 70s. Out of the window of their Bronx apartment before dropping her onto the concrete six stories below. Thanks, Ma. I needed that. Lawrence, being only 6 years old, was soon rushed to the St. Barnabas Hospital, but passed away an hour later at 2:30 p.m. on Thursday. As for Piron, 27, she was taken into custody by the officers and is now undergoing psychiatric evaluation at Bronx Lebanon Hospital Center. No, she's just a good Christian. Farron's godmother, Luella Hatch, mentioned as the officers took her away from the crime scene, she was screaming, "The devil is in her! The devil is in her! That's why I threw her out the window, man. Jesus loves me for it." Officers, however, believed that the mother of four was having a psychotic episode when she killed her child. Well, of course she was. That's what all these religious nuts have. They have psychotic episodes instead of, say, screaming, "The devil's in her! The devil's in her! Give her to me, and I'm going to throw her like a football, man." Oh, man, this world is something else. You watch the press, too, about how many guys go into the black churches and kill their ministers and kill the people. About once a month, there's some black guy goes into a black church and blasts away. Yeah, you offended me. This gal was described as a, quote, good and protective mother, unquote. According to one of her neighbors, she a good woman. She loved that kid. She protected that kid, and then she threw the kid out the window. Well, she didn't put the kid in the microwave, that's one thing. Something must have snapped. She must have had a breakdown or something, the neighbor told the police. No shit, Sherlock. You know, the funny part about this stuff, I get this stuff from black websites and pro-black outfits. Is this the best news they can put out, cheering up the black people? Well, here's a few whores from Hollywood, and they married a black spouse. Now, Halle Berry is married to Oliver Martinez. Now, Oliver Martinez is white, He's white. I can see that. Let's see who's next. Who's the next? Wait a minute. What the hell happened here? I'm losing track of my niggers. Wait a minute. Where's the rest of them? There's supposed to be 20 of them. Oh, boy. Let me see here. Oh, I see. Next. I forgot. I missed that one. Okay, now quit jumping around here. Oh, yeah, Robert De Niro and Grace Hightower. He's always been like the nigger women. Robert De Niro and Grace Hightower were married in 1997. The following year, in 1998, the two had a son named Elliot. The road for this couple wasn't as smooth as you would think. In 1999, the couple split since their divorce was never finalized. Then they renewed their vows in 2004. And on it goes. Jeez. Hollywood, da-da-da-da-da-da, Hollywood. This may upset you too. Matthew McConaughey and Camila Elves. She's a very high yellow mulatto with pretty much white features, but she is definitely a negress. For George Lucas and the movies, big producer, well, he's married to black Melody Hobson, and she is definitely a Negro. Well, these two I never heard of, Robin Thicke and Paula Patton. She's another high yellow. Mainly Aryan features, but she's coffee colored. High yellow, that's what I told you. They're breeding these high yellow women, and these white guys are too stupid to know the difference. Actually, it's not that they're too stupid, they just don't give a shit. As long as she performs good sex, that's all they care about. Well, here's another big whore in Hollywood, Kim Kardashian. She really likes nigger men. I think she's been going out with them for a long time. She's, I guess, married to this Kanye West. He's been getting quite a bit of press. Now, here's quite a pair. This Chris Evans. He must be on a TV show or something. I don't know who he is. But he's very white, very Aryan. But his black wife is typically negroidal. Her name is Naomi Harris. Two more, Mariah Carey. She's not a white woman. She's a mulatto herself. High yellow. And Nick Cannon. She doesn't look real negroid, but she sure as hell high yellow. Mulatto. I'm going to quit this. This is making me sick. I'm about to go all over my keyboard. Some of these right wingers drive you nuts. I know there's one or two that send me notes every once in a while. This gal, this mayoral candidate over there in Germany, that's some guy stabbed her in the neck. And this guy's saying, revolution is on. The revolution is on. You're going to have to stab a lot more people than that in the neck to get a revolution going. Well, let's get along there to Might Is Right a little bit again. Bush Rangers, freebooters, rebels, pirates have never lacked for love romances. Plays and novels by the thousands have been written about their escapades and always perennially popular. From the Arabian Nights down to the Marie Corelli and Quita. It is one long rhythmic lilt of love and women and war. Women authors are especially prone to glorify in their heroes beauty of form, daring, hardiness, and resolution. Jesse James and his reckless band of outlaws also have their famous love adventures. The mother of the James Boys, I read this to you yesterday. Need another page here. Sorry about that. Another of these slave betrayed mob abandoned enthusiasts was the brother of an American general and seems to have led a wandering, adventurous life, finally falling head over heels in love with a southern quadroon who still zealously fans the embers of her dead husband's agitation, limited, of course, by police censorship. Whenever she rises to speak in his city, she is surrounded by stenographic moochards and armed officers of the law in picturesque uniforms. See, they had a mulatto problem back then, too. Of course, you know, a lot of the capitalist planters' sons came off the plantation, hung out in the party rooms in New Orleans more than they did on the plantation. By direct command of the people, two of those men were choked to death and two others had their necks neatly broken amid reverberating shouts of worldwide approbation. Their power was not equal to their logic, and consequently they were snuffed out in strict accordance with the law of survival of the fittest. They who make half revolutions dig their own graves is an old Cromwellian proverb, and they that had evidently failed to properly consider. Thus the vibrations of matter and motion are to be seen in all social phenomena, and regal authority is upheld by the combined strength of arm and brain that give it birth. Quote, man, like every other animal, must remain subject to a severe struggle, unquote. Love in sexual relationship, power in social adjustments, polarity in magnetism is physics, gravitation in astronomy, and might in ethics are exact synonyms, correlated phrases of one primary assertive, the persistence of force. The Sultan of Turkey has been melodramatically described by W.E. Gladstone, that grand old spider, as the assassin of the century. And yet the women of the East, even those of Armenia, would claw each other's eyes out for half a chance to enter his harem. Dr. Jameson, the South African freebooter, and his chief, Cecil Rhodes, though unmercifully abused and denounced as wicked criminals, are continuously being deluged with written proposals of marriage from heiresses on both sides of the Atlantic. These two men, by force and diplomacy, stole 2 million acres of the finest agricultural and pastoral land in Africa, together with gold mines, silver mines, copper mines, diamond mines, also vast herds of sheep and cattle. Incidentally, now we've given it over to allegedly the niggers, but not really. There's Jews and white boys behind it. They carried fire and sword to the strongholds of their enemies, shot gods with rifle butts, cut the throats of priestly sorcerers in scores, shed the blood of adversaries like water, and reduced and defeated the Kaffirs to a respectable condition of constitutional freedom. There is no cant and hypocrisy about Cecil Rhodes, none. He is a man who made whole, blunt as Napoleon or Bismarck. He is in his own sphere of Caesar, Cromwell, Darwinian stock, believing implicitly in the survival of the fittest. He is the despair of the priestling and the terror of the politician. He laughs at their parchments, laws, and shrieking editorials. He rides roughshod over the golden rules. He scorns their sermons on the mount. He spits upon their tabulated commandments. He takes what he wants, and if he has the power, not otherwise. He does not beg. He does not pray. He does not steal. No, he goes directly for what he wants and annexes it, if he can. Nor does he weep crocodile tears over the enslavement of races that nature manifestly stamped with inferiority. In days long gone by, such men were the norms of Anglo-Saxondom. Now, alas, alas, they are astounding exceptions. If this republic had produced one Cecil Rhodes 40 years ago, the civil war provoked by idiotic emotionalism would never have happened. Civil wars are necessary when a country is overstocked, but these states were not overpopulated in 1862. Instead of sounding the jubilee for plantation niggers, he would have had sounded it for his own race by sending Grants and Shermans not to plunder and devastate the Shenandoah Valley and the home of Washington, but to seize, conquer, and recolonize the South and Central America from El Paso to Cape Horn. And I think what he meant there was repopulated with white people. Among our Norse and Germanic forefathers, it was considered the saddest disgrace that could befall any matron to be the mother of a weakling or a laggard in war, only for the debased influence of priestcraft that would be felt by modern women of all grades. Roman matrons had died of broken hearts and even drowned themselves in shame at the poltroonery displayed by a son. If past generations had to depend upon the sweet, girly, fragile young thing of today, or the lean lady graduate for its reproductive ova, we would long ago have become a swarm of ring-tailed baboons. Poor things, they also feel their artificiality, speaking it in their hearts when they look upon the spindle-shanked and mutilated males, scarecrows of men that are expected to love, honor, and obey. Over-intellectualism, bad enough in a man, transfigures women into freaks. The more animal nature a maiden possesses, the more the true woman she is, the better wife and mother she will make. Culture and refinement are horrible substitutes for the grand old matronly values or virtues. Beauty, naturalness, purity, maidliness, and hypnotism. The intellectualism renders more sensitive. Sensitive persons are more excitable, timid, and liable to disease. Overcultivation of the brain cells undoubtedly produces in both sexes physical decay and leads on towards insanity. Women's noblest occupation is not merely to read erotic novels, pound the fiddle, waltz divinely, or fry steak and onions, but to breed men, to raise up to a race of unsubstituable fighters for their own hand, her vilest occupation to duplicate anemic poltroons, creeping Judases, laborious jackasses. Therefore, she desires her sons to be brave, bold, and successful in the battle of life. She should see to it that her husband is not a coward or a slave. And men ought to also beware of marrying a slave-minded woman. This point I simply set forth in the saga of Olaf Tryggvason. Earl Rugwald had a degenerate son who returned from a Viking cruise without bringing any plunder. This was considered a shameful disgrace by the family. Earl Rugwald remarked, "My son is not like my forefathers." So he fitted the young man out afresh, saying to him, "I shall be pleased if you come not again, but I have little hope that you will ever be an honor to your kinsmen, for your mother's family are all thrall-born." Have moderns ever improved on that thought? There is nothing particularly inviting about barren, dyspeptic, blue-stocking, new women in pants and spectacles, talking idiotic snuffle through their nose, with busts made of adjustable India rubber, with narrow and padded hips and wheels between their legs, scorching across the curbstone like mad. When such women are captured, what good are they? They won't even breed, or if they do, it's by accident. Their puny embryos have to be delicately nurtured into life with steam-heated incubator mechanism and afterwards fed and weaned on the bottle. The sons of such women, bottle-fed abortions, of what good are they? Well, let's see here. Hold it. Hold it.
We've got to find this guy. sovereignty is reserved for those with the means to dictate outcomes. That's us. Fortune favors the bold. We're moving forward with the plan. It's time for a change in leadership.
The risk profile is not insignificant.
The only risk is doing nothing. Our asset will take over the one federal agency posing a threat to us. John Kennedy will take care of Martin Otis. And only takes us all.
That little clip, I'm afraid it was a little loud for you, but that was from the series Legends on Roku. And I'm telling you, that's a really, really good series, Legends. Well, that's it for now. We'll be back with you tomorrow on Tuesday, yeah. In the meantime, shut up. I have nothing to say.
Daryl Stokes at Dom Sama. All hope got Santa Claus. He was laying on the couch on Christmas Eve over at his sister-in-law's. When he heard something walking up on the roof, he laid down his Christmas beard. And went and got the same 357 Magnum that Santa brought him last year. And Daryl Stokes, that dumb son of a, started shooting in the fireplace. He blowed all the buckles off of Santa's boots and left powder burns on his face. He didn't realize Santa had a heart condition, and it was a Christmas mess. When the youngins come downstairs and found Daryl pumping on Santa's chest. And Daryl Stokes, that dumb son of a, gave Santa a heart attack. But with some CPR he'd learned in prison, he was able to bring him back. And there's a split-level house in Tennessee that was wrapped in a Christmas gloom. They called 911 and the paramedics took Santa to the emergency room. And Daryl Stokes, that dumb son of a, felt bad about what he did. The least he could do was to try to save Christmas and not disappoint the kids. So he hooked the reindeer to his GTO, and that is the reason, folks. If your gifts don't get here till late September, you can thank that dumb son of a Daryl Stone.